Welcome, everyone, to RB1 Colon Fantasy Football Podcast, part of the Fake Teams Podcast channel. I am your humble host and rebuilder of the Devin Funchess hype train, Pete Rogers, and I am joined by some of the guys, slash maybe all of the guys, we'll see, who we do have. We have resident old man and the duck father, Clark Barnes, and ginger clean-shaven man and political wildcard, Nick Botiford. Working girl and Jordan Love superfan, Jordan Smith, might join us at some point. Who knows? The message has been sent out. We shall see if he receives. Guys, how are we doing today?
Doing great, Pete.
Good, Pete. How you doing?
I am doing well. You guys want to hear something kind of crazy?
Yes.
This is our 180th episode. Not normally a number you celebrate, but that's an impressive amount of content we've produced over the, 3 years now?
I'm impressed.
Yeah. Pats on the old back to us, and pats on the old back to you listeners who stuck around.
Will we be hitting 200 like right as the season starts?
I feel like that probably would be right. Well, what's that?
Pretty close.
We do one a week, 20 episodes left, 20 weeks from now.
We'll start doing more when it comes
once
draft
it gets
time,
closer.
Right?
That's true. Yeah, we'll go back to twice a week, and maybe we'll align it. Man, yeah, if the NFL, I mean, maybe even the delay in the NFL season that could slash might happen could really work for us too, because it could even extend their off season so that we could really milk it and get that 200 right on the first day of NFL action to, you know, really make a big deal out of it. Really something that all of the internet can celebrate with us.
The NFL is going to start on time. All the games might be played in the South and other relatively free states, but it's going to happen.
Yeah.
I am super curious to see if they just end up forcing players to like live in a tent city together kind of a thing.
It's kind of, I mean, cause like with basketball, that's the whole discussion. The whole discussion is, or when they're talking about the playoffs, is that it's a lot easier to quarantine playoff teams, which is already what? Let me do some quick math in my head.
Most of the NBA.
Well, it's like half of it, isn't it? It's like 14. I'm good at numbers. We'll say 16 because that makes sense because there's 8 seeds. God damn, I'm so smart. Anyways, 15 people per team, 16 teams. A lot easier to quarantine that number of people, and coaching staff and personnel and all that jazz, as opposed to quarantining 32 teams of 53 players and coaching staff and all that kind of stuff. So it would be interesting to see what is the NFL's solution. And maybe, Nick, you're right. Maybe it is just like we're taking over high school stadiums and we are going to have a giant tent community that that you can walk through.
Who knows? If we're going to talk about football, I will just reserve comment of, that's just, yep. It's going
to
happen.
Would you pay $20 to be a virtual 3D fan on the broadcast?
No, I don't pay $20 to watch the games. I do it by hook and by crook.
So you're not paying to virtually just wave as a 3D person in the crowd when the camera cuts to you?
No.
I think you should be able to, like, on if that happens on the broadcast, you should then, based on how much you pay, how much is equivalent to how much airtime you then get as a fan. So like a fan could come in and be like, hey, I'm gonna drop $3,000 and I would like to be on the screen for a total of like 20 minutes. And ESPN has to figure out how to sandwich 20 minutes of you waving as a 3D model into the game.
That's a fine idea.
They would charge so much.
Yeah. I was about to say that it'd be unlikely that I would go pay to see a game just because they're so expensive. But now that I live in the communist Pacific Northwest, if I could go to a Seahawks game and irritate a bunch of people, well, then I would gladly do it.
Clark going hard for that political wildcard title from Nick.
I feel like
coming for that game.
I'm fine with him being number one and me playing second fiddle on that one. I feel like we're close already.
I think I'm pretty coherent.
That doesn't preclude you from being a wild card.
Okay. Yeah.
Still,
I feel like we have different definitions of wild card.
Yeah. You can be coherent as a wild card.
Cogent, coherent.
Yeah.
All those C words.
So what? Yeah. I guess I'm just not to digress here too much, but Clark, I'm very curious to know how you would, I guess, distress the people of Seattle.
Just by going and existing and not wearing all of the mandated things. It's going to be fantastic.
Going to
rub it in their
protesting?
Face. Yeah, Clark
literally.
Dude, I make enough money to afford to do this, and I don't think I should give it to you. Things like that. Wear my Monopoly monocle and top hat.
Yes,
that's up here. That's called the Robber Baron. I don't know if you've seen the gifts of Pete Carroll with the animated Robber Baron attire as he's strutting down the field.
So to me, that's a reference to U.S. history. So I'm familiar with the old Robber Barons. I'm in.
Well, we have
Clark lived it. Very prominent. Clark was here. There when the Robber Baron existed. Right.
I still remember what it was like in Ludlow, guys. And if anyone gets that, if you could please tweet, one person got that reference.
One person. One person make Clark feel like he is not alone in this world.
Anyway, all right. Schedule. Or news. I don't know. Sorry.
Well, we got news. We got the schedule. We're going to talk stank of schedule. That's what it should be called. Am I right, you guys? No, that's a stanky schedule. Some strength of schedule. But first, let's hit some news. Not too much going on in the NFL these days, obviously. Well, first news bulletin I wanted to hit on, though, is something that came out today. The Eagles, and this is a direct quote, want a powerful volume running back who can handle 12 to 15 carries per game. They'd also like a guy with slightly more pass-catching ability than they got from LeGarrette Blount a few years ago. And that is from Holden Kushner of Holden Radio, at Holden Radio. It's a report on NBC Sports. I think I just gave a shout-out to some random guy who tweeted the article and not actually the person who reported it. But hey, props to you, Holden, for making it onto the show.
Congratulations.
Yeah. This people have tied, and it sounds like the Eagles are tying Carlos Hyde to it as well.
Baby.
which Clark is all for. Well, I understand the vibe of like, yes, we want to have another back is fine, but why can't we just accept the fact that Miles Sanders should be the lone star in this field? And why are we trying to get another running back into Philadelphia who's going to take 12 touches away from him? Nick, talk to me.
This kind of ruined my day for a little bit. So the thing is, they have a really talented backup in Boston Scott already. He's a very similar player to Miles Sanders. He's a pass catcher. He runs well, but he's a versatile dual threat back. And I just think that, like, if they're concerned with Sanders, who's not, I don't think, very slight of frame. I mean, I am off the top of my head, I think he's like 5'11", 215 kind of a thing. I'll check that out. But I mean, what Bert, is
stats information around it?
What is Carlos Hyde bringing to the table? He's 5'11", 211. That's fine. You know, Pete Carroll thinks that you win by running the football, and he likes to quote that all of the like top five leaders in rush yards are all between, it's like 5'9", 5'11", and 210 and 220. But I just don't get it. Sanders is so friggin' talented, and when they unleashed him at the end of last year, he ran and caught all over everybody. Boston Scott did the same thing when everybody was banged up. I like deploy these two, split it, you know, 18 to 12 with those two guys. I don't know. Carlos Hyde is just sucking the life out of every backfield he goes to. If it is 12 carries, okay, but 15, god damn.
The extra body makes complete sense because Carlos Hyde is okay. And he has been around for a long time. And if he's the third string guy and he's going to get in there and, run into the back of the lineman for a couple of plays because the coaching staff wants to spare their young backs that they've got on a great deal. Well, in that case, I feel like that's fine. You need three or four talented running backs in the NFL. It's kind of it's an anomaly for someone to get 360, 370 touches and make it through the season. I'm hoping that the generally more progressive Eagles staff is going to deploy Carlos Hyde like that instead of the Neanderthalic Texan staff who's like, lead back! So, fingers crossed. I like Miles Sanders. I like the Eagles' offense. Carlos Hyde as a body is fine. Carlos Hyde as a, we're going to have a thunder and lightning. Well, shit, now there's one fewer running back to be excited about.
The best thing that can come out of this is that all of this kind of smoke and whatever, the Eagles saying all this crap about how they want to bring in another back to kind of complement Miles Sanders or be a 12 to 15 carry guy, then they ultimately don't do it. Like the best thing is that this just suppresses Miles Sanders' fantasy, you know, stock, and that he kind of drops down a little bit, and which will be primo, because I think that if he falls into like, because I think he's going in like the second round right now, which is, I think, worthy because he's going to be very good this year. But that's a little like, if he drops into the third round, perfect. I'm drafting him everywhere. So I just, I'm gonna drum this news up as a as an eventual reality to help suppress his value a little bit.
Yeah, this is the kind of move you used to be able to take advantage of in those early best ball drafts if you didn't live in a socialist hellhole like Washington.
Yep.
We're going to have to explain what socialism is at some point, but now is not the segment.
We'll save that for the political podcast. Also in running back news, earlier, I think it was late last week, the Jets signed Frank Gore, who just...
Oh, boy.
Does not retire. The man, and the crazy thing about Frank Gore is that you feel like he's, you know, and eventually the guy has to stop playing, like not just playing football, but also playing well. Had almost 600 yards, had 599 yards on 166 touches and 2 touchdowns last year. Is that great? No, but it's better production than I thought he had. So there you go, Frank Gore. Way to make your way to New York and maybe be the only running back under Adam Gase who could actually produce, because you just can't not.
This one's tough. It's really spooky that Gase was actually, you know, he wanted to bring this guy in. That's not, if you're hoping for a bell cow season out of Le'Veon Bell, you don't want the coach bringing in his, like, old favorite who he used to coach. I think I'm not as excited about Bell as I am Sanders, just given the offenses and all that kind of stuff. But I think this, like, absolutely is a big hit to Le'Veon Bell.
Oh, yeah.
Adam Gase, man. I just, there's no words.
We should, I mean, it's we want to bring the best information to you as possible, you the listeners. But I am starting to feel like maybe we should just put, like, a Adam Gase kibosh and just be like, sorry, anything Adam Gase related we just won't touch, because what's the benefit that he, until he proves that he can actually help players reach their truest self and be fantasy viable starters, it, you know, until he proves that he can do that, then what are we doing here? Why are we talking about it?
If he could just, like, be Pete Carroll and not, like, wreck careers, just sort of exist and have, like, a decent team, that would even be one thing. That's like, I'm not afraid to draft the Seahawks. I'm not happy about it, but, like, I don't feel comfortable outside of Jamison Crowder and full point PPR, like, drafting anybody on the Jets.
Yeah. Yeah. I know I'm going to stumble into some Denzel Mims stock because I just, I want to a certain extent, but I also am just like, God damn it. I really don't want to put any of my fantasy success in the hands of Adam Gase. All right. Well, there you go. That's the last we'll ever talk of Adam Gase on this show. Finally in the news, this isn't fantasy relevant. It's just a feel good story. Late last week, a video surfaced of Alex Smith working out again. And there's also earlier in the week, a picture showing actually what his life looked like, after the injury for those who like could stomach it. It was not pretty. It was absolutely disgusting. In fact, and just seeing Alex Smith like back on the football field doing drills while wearing just a like, massive leg brace, but props to this guy, because this guy has, like, his career has taken many different arcs. He was first seen as a bust and then helped lead San Francisco on a deep playoff run, and then went to, what did he do after San Francisco? Kansas City.
Got to the playoffs there,
and then was replaced by Patrick Mahomes, and then went to Washington, and then immediately got his leg shattered into a billion pieces. And, like, if I were Alex Smith, I'd be like, and that is it. I am done. I have made millions of dollars. I will never play football again. But props to the guy to, like, having the courage and the, you know, ability and the mental fortitude to constantly be working and to get back into hope some sort of decent football shape, at least be walking and running and exercising. So props to him.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. I would be sitting out. Not entertaining. I don't know if he's actually seriously entertaining a return, but the whispers out there are enough for me to just not understand what he's thinking.
Here's to you, Alex. And that's it. That's all we got in the news. So we are going to take a look at the NFL schedule, since they make a whole hullabaloo about their scheduled release, which is just the dumbest thing in the world. But hey, you know what? We're sitting in the midst of quarantine with nothing going on. Let's have a 3-hour ESPN segment about how great this schedule is as it gets released, because why not? We're going to get into that. But before we do, we're going to take a quick ad break. All right, we are back. And now for the main segment of this week, I would like to welcome on the analytics king, Nick's favorite Twitter follow, the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Warren Sharp. Strength of schedule read to us by Nick Potiphar.
I sort of get excited there. Yeah, so I a couple years ago stumbled across Sharp and the work that he was doing, and I really didn't have a good understanding of how what his methods were. It takes an understanding of how he came into prominence in the football world to really trust what he's doing. Basically, he came up building a database and a number of algorithms for football projections, and his market was betting on win totals. He quickly became extremely successful in this. I think his win percentage right now hovers somewhere around like 64% in the betting world. If you're over 50%, and we're talking like major bets, like people bankrolling and that kind of a thing, you're over 50. It's pretty astonishing. So to be in the mid 60s is awesome. That being said, that leads us into the way that he goes about projecting strength of schedules. If you check out like ESPN or NFL.com, you're going to be looking at strength of schedules that just show a team's their strength of schedules just based on who they're facing and what their records were last year. So if a team went 10-6, then that means it's hard. That doesn't account for offseason acquisitions, front office changes, all that kind of stuff. Vegas, however, does Las Vegas, the sports books, they do. They spend months digging through this. So what Sharp does is he makes the basis of his strength of season scheduling based on Las Vegas win total. So you get a starkly different picture. His analysis shows that looking at just last season's win record don't actually have much of an impact on this year. So yeah, he's incorporated this to great success. Like last year, I think this is on the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. He accurately predicted 3 of the top 5 easy schedules of 2019. And one of the ones that was in the top 5 finished in the 7th. When his 2019 football preview comes out, he lists all of his historic, all of his calls from the previous years in there. He, you know, holds himself accountable, all that. So anyway, just as a note, you can think about things from like the previous season. If a quarterback goes down, and you know, you don't have somebody like Gardner Minshew or Nick Foles to step in, a lot of times a team that could be really good, their record gets shot to hell. And so if you're looking at the traditional way of doing it, you're this team that has a really talented quarterback that is not going to be representative of their previous season's record. So what we're going to do with this segment here is just break down the top 5 hardest and easiest offense or strength of schedules for 2020.
Can I make one amendment?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the stank of schedule is what we're
okay. Discussing. Sorry. Yeah. Saving
my own face.
So I think, do you guys want to start with the easiest or the hardest?
Let's start with the hardest, and we can conclude with the easiest and what we think that kind of how that impacts fantasy drafts and whatnot.
Cool. So if you're curious, you know, I wish you just head over to sharpfootballstats.com. The interface for working with his strength of stank of schedule stuff is very easy to use, and you can filter for a ton of different things. So what I did when looking at this was just looked at the overall difficulty of the schedule and then looked at the breakdowns of the pass blend and the rush blend. So basically the overall pass defense and rush defense of the opposing team is what we're looking for is fantasy information. So with the we'll go from number 28 up to 32. 28 being the I guess fifth worst schedule in the NFL this year for Warren Sharp is the Denver Broncos. They're going to face the 26th most difficult pass or rush defense slate and the 31st most difficult pass defense slate. So if you were getting excited about Drew Lock like I was, now that his receiving core is loaded, this might give you pause. Similarly with Melvin Gordon, the 26th hardest rush defense schedule is nothing to shake a stick at. And that's actually their easier setup, right? With the pass defense slate being the 31st. So this is going to be a tough year for the Broncos. What do you guys think? How's this going to impact them?
Yeah, I certainly don't love it. Because you're right, this is a team that has a ton of offseason hype given all the weapons that they've added, and that you're just hoping, and clearly all of Denver is like fully on board the Drew Lock train, and so they're all hoping that he comes to fruition. So having one of the tougher schedules is certainly nothing to you know, ignore when you're looking at fantasy drafts. I still think that Cortland Sutton is going to be is a lock for a wide receiver too, at the very least, and probably will be a top 15 guy in redraft leagues and PPR and probably standard as well. So I don't think he takes too much of a hit, but like someone like Jerry Jeudy, you know, who is a rookie coming in, is going to have no offseason. You're basically going to hit the ground running and see what he can do. I think he's supremely talented, but he might have a learning curve. Noah Fant, I know a lot of people have a lot of big expectations for him this year, but the tight end position is so fickle that I don't really know how much faith you're going to be able to put into him. I think you're right. In a situation like this, I'm betting on the names that we know set in stone. And I think really in Denver, that's Cortland Sutton. I'm getting hyped about Melvin Gordon because of the role and because of the workload that could fall on him in Denver. The 28th best or worst defensive front in terms of facing defensive plate in terms of run defense has me a little worried. I don't think it would deter me too much from taking a shot on Melvin Gordon. The passing though is what worries me, especially since you're ultimately relying on Drew Lock to being able to like step up to the plate.
What I like to use this kind of stuff for is to, as just one piece of information amongst a lot of pieces of information. With the Broncos, there was a lot of new things going on. Drew Lock in his second year, picking up some wide receiver talent, picking up a new running back, a lot of question marks. And to hear that this team that was already kind of borderline, a team that I might avoid, is going to
be expected by a very sharp person,
pun intended,
to also have a rough schedule. This is really kind of the nail in the coffin for me for avoids on people like Melvin Gordon, who you're probably going to have to take in the middle of the second, end of the first, and betting on Drew Lock, who didn't look great, betting on a really questionable offense already. This is a really good block building the wall of, I'm not going to have any Broncos. Ugh, that wasn't good. But anyway, thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. So I should have clarified just the way that he does the like strength of the rating or the number rating. One is easiest, 32 is hardest. So yeah. Anyway, moving on. Number 29, the Las Vegas Raiders. They are coming in against the 20th hardest rush defense schedule and the 27th hardest pass defense schedule. John Gruden, he showed really well in his play calling last year. I think the way that he's doing the team building is still a little bit suspect. But I think that, you know, there were already some concerns about Henry Ruggs' workload coming into this year just as a rookie. Given the fact that it's going to be tough for them to just practice at all, and they're now facing a tough pass defense slate, I think I'm kind of off the bandwagon here on what I was thinking would be an exciting rookie year. I think they'll do more with him than just using him just as a downfield threat, but this does give me pause.
Yeah, again, a lot of uncertainty. This is the time of year and leading up to preseason where rookie fever is huge, because all we've had to do is look at rookies coming up on the draft. And then we just kind of forget that outside of a couple of years, rookies that are not running backs generally don't perform well in their first year. So a lot of overdrafted rookies that I usually look past. Again, another building block in that this is a team to avoid. You know, they picked up Mariota. I don't think that that's a sign that Derek Carr is on the way out, but it is a move that you do if you're not completely happy with your quarterback. It's a transition year. I like Josh Jacobs a lot because they're gonna give him a lot of touches, and I believe, you know, touches equal production at the running back position, and that's, you know, I don't know, this is bad news for the Raiders.
Yeah, so far all this is proving to me is that I'm really fickle on passing games and I'm really timid and scared off by them. Ground games, I'll just plow through the noise. Like, I was like, I've becoming supportive of Melvin Gordon, so I'm rolling with it. And then with this Raiders, while you were talking, Nick, I'm like, nah, Josh Jacobs, still take him, still trust him. So
yeah, he's in such an interesting situation. I mean, they re-signed Jalen Richard, and then they drafted Lynn Bowden, who could play receiver. So I mean, seems like Josh Jacobs, he's just being set up for a rush only type year. I guess if they load him up with 20 carries, then maybe you can kind of fade the noise and still keep pace with him. But I'm a little shaky on him.
The Henry Ruggs thing, I think you're right too, because I think he's a guy, and you talked about this on last week's show, where it's like Henry Ruggs could either see 130 targets and like just wow you because of the fact that he suddenly becomes the only / number one receiver in that offense, or he could be someone that things don't quite click. It takes a little bit of time, and you know, maybe he ends up with only like 60 targets and he's not really able to produce too much with that. So having a tough passing schedule certainly doesn't make that situation too much easier. Why don't you rattle off three through one for us?
Okay, you got it. Three through one, just moving quickly here, is the New York Jets, the New York Giants, and the Atlanta Falcons with the hardest schedule. The points that stand out here are the Jets facing the 27th most difficult pass schedule.
Whoa. As well as, God yeah, damn it.
Yeah, as well as the Falcons facing the 30th and 25th in rush defense. So the Falcons, they
wait, what was the Falcons rush defense that they're facing?
Falcons, they're effectively the 7th most challenging run defense schedule and the 3rd most challenging pass defense schedule. I don't know what the Falcons front office was thinking. They should have drafted CeeDee Lamb as soon as he fell to them, because looking down the barrel of this, like they knew what teams they were facing. They just didn't know the order. I can't believe that they're going to roll with 31-year-old Julio and just Calvin Ridley and Hayden Hurst.
How dare you?
Wow. You heard it here first, you guys. Nick hates Julio Jones and thinks he's not a Hall of Fame wide receiver and should retire immediately.
Okay. So we'll take the jokes, but I think that both Julio and Ridley are awesome players. That is just – I mean, after them, it's like Russell Gage as their 3rd receiver. You got to go look the names up. It's rough.
Yeah, this is – yet again, I'm like, Todd Gurley, I'm still in on.
Yeah, with that, they literally could give him, like, again, 25-plus touches a game. So,
let's do it!
Go, Clark, yeah.
So, Atlanta's pretty good at moving the football. Matt Ryan is pretty good. Even at his, near geriatric age of 31, I still think Julio is fantastic. Calvin Ridley is coming up. This gives me zero pause about the Falcons pass game just because they are so talented. The Jets and the Giants, this is just confirmation bias of I'm already not interested in anyone named Saquon Barkley or a screaming deal that's not going to happen on Le'Veon Bell on either one of those teams. I think the Falcons are more than veteran enough at the positions that count to overcome the passing game problem. This does raise pause for Todd Gurley breaking some ties against him, because I think there's going to be enough people who haven't drank the Gurley has done Kool-Aid, they haven't been burned by him. I think he's still going to end up going in the second or at least the third round, and this may be a good thing to keep in mind if you like another back in that area to pass on Gurley.
The Giants and Jets, this is just for the proof you don't touch those offense. Before we go on to the easiest ones, Nick, like Saquon is basically looking like if you're going to take him in redrafts, you're taking him like top two, top three picks. Are you still willing to make that commitment because of the fact that last season he wasn't as productive as maybe we thought was? I know that had to do with injuries, but his work in the passing game decreased a lot. Are you guys still willing to pay that rich of a price tag for Saquon with this tough schedule in front of him?
A fair question. So, I mean, Christian McCaffrey, he's coming off the board number one. Something I had in my notes here, the Cowboys are facing the 9th easiest schedule. So I'm probably going to plop Zeke ahead of Saquon there. Yeah.
That's fair.
And then, I mean, the other two I'd be considering would be Kamara and Dalvin Cook. The Saints are 23rd most challenging schedule this season, and I'm just trying to, and Vikings are 13th, so I wouldn't have an issue with dropping Barkley past Zeke and
Dalvin.
And Dalvin Cook. Yeah, and then I don't know, maybe a toss up between him and Kamara.
Yeah, I think it's time to put together the top 100 again, and just the quick conversation.
Let's
here.
Let's do it, Clark.
I think I'd go with Zeke as number one again. Not because I think that he's better than Christian McCaffrey, but just you have to pick, and Zeke with that offense, I think, gets the edge. And yeah. And this is a great way to look stupid, saying that you think Zeke is one over
McCaffrey being two, because if I ended up with McCaffrey, I would be ecstatic. But Barkley does kind of get pushed down to that end of the, oh my God, I'm excited that I got this elite running back category, not because he's not amazing, but because he is still on the Giants, and if they're going to have a tough rush schedule too, I don't know. I'd be ecstatic to get him at number five, but he would not be my number two running back.
Yep, that was some good stank of schedule. Now, Nick, it's time for spank of schedule. Am I right?
Yeah. All right,
you're doing really good.
Thank you. I liked how Nick was all in that before he really understood what I had said. He's like, yeah, oh no, I immediately regret agreeing to that.
That was really gross. So the top five here is pretty interesting. Teams one through four have some glorious schedules. Number five though is a little bit different than the others. So number five, easiest overall schedule in 2020 is the Los Angeles Chargers. That being said, they come in against the 16th easiest run defense schedule and the 26th easiest pass defense schedule, which means they're playing a tough pass defense schedule.
Yeah.
Now, they're also playing a bunch of teams, evidently, that don't have very good offenses. What I think this amounts to is a whole lot of ball control and not very exciting football, you know, depending on what your philosophy is, not very exciting football out of the Chargers. I think this is bad news for the pass catching core. But I think it's bad news for Austin Eckler. I think we got to try to figure out who's going to be carrying the ball as the grinder. Is it their rookie? Was it Josh Kelly or is it Justin Jackson?
Yeah. I was just thinking, who's the fourth string running back that no one's excited about, but has played for a while? Like, starting to get real tempting on that flyer pick for the Chargers.
Yeah. I think you're right, especially when you have either Tyrod Taylor or Justin Herbert under center. Like, if you're playing teams that aren't going to light up the scoreboard, then why bother trying to push those guys into situations maybe they're not entirely comfortable in? Obviously, they will have two games on their schedule that they're going to have to put points on the board when they play the Chiefs, but
they could just get killed.
They could
might not put any points.
They could just roll over. We give up. We're not going to win the division anyways.
Another thing in the, you know, Chargers backfield is something to investigate deeply. They have a really boring defensive-minded head coach. So those uninspired guys often really love to find a pedestrian running back and just give him the ball 30 times.
Yep. That's fair. So just to grind this in, I mean, they do have to play a couple of prolific offenses, but they're also looking at the Bengals and then the Bridgewater Panthers, Jets, Dolphins, Jags, Raiders, Broncos, Falcons, Raiders, Broncos. There's a lot of middling offenses in there that are not going to push the pace.
But they're definitely a team. You're right. They're definitely, and I don't know what 4-1 is because I'm waited with bated breath. But
yeah,
they seem like a team that the strength of schedule doesn't necessarily get you more excited for them from a fantasy standpoint. Give us 4-1.
Yeah. Okay. So this is going to be fun. So. Number four, Baltimore Ravens.
Oh,
they're coming in with the third easiest slate of run defenses and the sixth easiest slate of pass defenses.
The NFL, what are we doing here?
He's still in my heart.
Oh my God. Fuck worrying about Mark Ingram and like the touches in that backfield. J.K. Dobbins, Mark Ingram, Lamar Jackson, they're all going to eat.
It's going to be real interesting, and especially if Ingram looks phenomenal and you happen to have drafted Dobbins, I think he's probably going to be like flex Dobbins at his flex worthy. You can sell him, you know, at some point during the year, like, and keep the bell cow. I like this a lot.
How does the best running team in the NFL wind up with the third easiest run schedule. That's incredible. I love it. I'm here for it 100%. Yeah.
Okay, moving on, number three. This one could be interesting. The Cleveland Browns face the eighth easiest pass run defense schedule, and the fifth easiest pass defense schedule.
So I don't want anybody. Go ahead.
Well, we talked a little bit about where to draft Odell Beckham Jr., and for me, it's high.
Yes.
And everybody else too. Yeah, go for it, Clark. Let's do this.
So I'm a huge believer in coaching changing teams. When you had a really talented team underperform so poorly, there was a lot of turmoil in Cleveland last year with all of the shenanigans going on. Steven Stefanski, who runs the semi, Shanahan Kubiak style of zone running, rolling out the quarterback, moving guys around, playing as if you are an intelligent football coach style of offense, gets me really hot and bothered every year. I think Chubb ran a lot of zone stuff in college, and even if he didn't, I don't care. We trust in Nick Chubb. He might get into that top three or four running backs for me this year. I'm super excited. I think that a coaching change and a second year together for all of these guys does the Browns really good. And then to hear that they also may get some favorable scheduling from the gods makes me even more excited about the discounts you're getting on all of these guys. We just talked about our top five running backs, didn't even mention Nick Chubb. So,
moving on to number two, Tennessee Titans coming in with the second easiest rush defense schedule and the 13th easiest pass defense schedule.
Derrick Henry will never die. This is incredible. Oh my God, I love it. This is exactly the narrative we needed for Derrick Henry coming in off of that incredible season last year where everyone, as soon as the season ended, you know it. I did it. I did it in my own head. I was like, you know what? Derrick Henry is coming off of an offseason, like the last 5 weeks in an offseason where they worked him to the bone. He's going to be so dead tired. Like, don't draft him in fantasy. He's not going to live up to expectations. And now that the Titans have one of the best schedules, I am back in, baby.
The only thing I'll say is he led the league, I believe, in rush attempts, rushing yards, and touchdowns. I think he's going to do it again. Like, if you can get good odds on that, put the money down.
This is incredible.
Yeah, I bet against Derrick Henry last year, and I feel like that wasn't one of my best takes. And, yeah, the Titans franchise tagged him. They are headed by a defensive-minded coach who doesn't seem like a troglodyte. So I think this offense looked really good with just a competent quarterback last year and a strong defense. And they showed us at the end of the year what they can do. Now, if they start off really slow, then we'll know that the Titans are just not good at football the first half of the season. Well, then you'd want to line up Henry for those trade targets.
It's, yeah, then get him on your team for the playoffs. Yeah. No, so but maybe. this is great for those hoping of seeing what we saw when Ryan Tannehill took over the offense continuing into 2020, it seems. Is that like, you know, if the Titans were to wind up with a really tough schedule, maybe it would still come to fruition that we would this explosive passing attack we saw last year with AJ Brown and a little bit of Corey Davis and obviously Ryan Tannehill moving that offense, that, you know, maybe it would falter. But given the fact that it has an easy schedule lined up for it, like, it seems like everything is there for this offense to kind of keep doing what we saw it do last year, and maybe start drafting with that kind of confidence and treating them like they are that team heading into 2020.
Yeah, I think the only thing that such good news gives me pause about is what they're going to be doing with AJ Brown. A really nice predictive year-to-year measure is the yards per route run, and he's up there in like historically elite territory at such a young age. I think the world of him, but I am concerned that there are going to be some times when he just gets game scripted at a game. I think he's worthy of being a top 15 wide receiver, if not top 12. But I do wonder if there's going to be some weeks where you just go, yeah, I think there's going to be 23 rushes from Henry and they're going to pack up and head home.
All right. Number one, who is it? Who has the easiest schedule? It's going to be the Chiefs.
It is going to be the Indianapolis Colts. Woo-hoo! The fourth easiest slate of run defenses and the fourth easiest slate of pass defenses. So any concerns that we had about Jonathan Taylor's dropping of passes, I think we can kind of put those to rest. I think he's a lock to be over 1,000 yards and put up some TDs. They brought in Phillip Rivers. They're trying to win right now. They drafted a running back early, and that offensive line, I think, is the best in the league. This is going to be a run happy offense, and Rivers, he's going to do some fun stuff too. But I'm pretty excited about Jonathan Taylor.
Are we just done with Marlon Mack? What's the word, or is it yet to be determined? Or are we sharing? I know they spent a ton of draft capital.
It sounds like they're going to be sharing. So take that for whatever it is. I think that what you'll see is kind of what I would expect from most of these rookies, in that probably the first half of the season, it's probably going to be Marlon Mack heavy. And then as Jonathan Taylor learns the playbook, gets better acquainted with the NFL, we'll see his touches and maybe his bulk of the offense rise. I have no idea, but I do think that it's going to be something where they're both going to see touches, obviously. And I also think that Nyheim Hines is going to have also sneaky value, considering that he has that passing role, I think, pretty locked down. And we've seen what Phillip Rivers, I know last year was a little bit skewed given just that how quickly Phillip Rivers needed to get rid of the ball, given how shitty the Chargers offensive line was and how involved we saw Austin Eckler in the passing game. But I do think Nyheim Hines also is going to have a really nice role in this this Colts offense. This is great for hopefully a healthy T.Y. Hilton. Michael Pittman Jr. is going to get, like, I'm getting hyped about him now. I think there are maybe better offenses that I would have loved to have had the number one spot, but having the Colts here is certainly exciting, to say the least. Clark, how do you feel about the one and two spots being AFC South teams, probably because of the fact that the rest of the AFC South sucks?
I just feel like it's West Coast, East Coast bias. These are just people just out to get the team that I like. Personal vendettas.
It's fair.
I don't know. I, as much as there is up in the air for the Colts, I believe in Frank Reich. I think he is a fantastic coach, if not just a fantastic offensive mind. Jacoby Brissett is a good backup quarterback, and we'll see if Phillip Rivers is more than that late in his career. I think that he is. Watched him play last year. It was rough, but he had some pretty rough circumstance to put up with. So I think the Colts are going to be super interesting this year. I haven't heard a lot about T.Y. Hilton. I know that he is a lot smaller than what Phillip Rivers is used to throwing to, but T.Y. Hilton is not just a little guy who runs fast. Pretty good route runner. He's been around for a while, so might be some sneaky value on the Colts.
I'm kind of wondering if Paris Campbell's going to end up taking over sort of the Keenan Allen. He's primarily working the slot. I think that's going to be his role more so than anyone else's. And I think he's going to be somebody that I'm going after. Regarding their running backs, though, to expand on the pass catching aspect, stop me if you've heard this before. There's been so much talk about what is going to happen with the pass catching back role. I have never been a fan of Nyheim Hines. I always thought Jordan Wilkins would beat him out back in the day. Silva's whole thing is, and again, this is stop me if you heard it before, and I've seen it too. Mack is a really good pass catcher, and I just don't understand why he's not given that role. And that's what the ETR guys are pushing, and they've sold me on that completely. I think it would make way more sense to just kick Hines to the curb, let him return punt, and get Taylor and Marlon Mack out there splitting touches like 15 per game. And at that rate, with this schedule, they go 80 yards and a touchdown apiece, no problem.
Awesome. Well, round of applause for Warren Sharp for doing all of this strength of scheduling. Great work by him. A light clap for Nick for reading it, but really it's not your own work.
Nick, leading the segment, bringing this to us.
Well done, Nicholas.
I drop out on a lot of news during the off season because a lot of it is just the echo chamber. But this was I appreciate you bringing this up, Nick. This was enlightening.
Yeah, it's been exciting. I think we've all in the COVID era been looking forward to some fun things happening, and I think football, it feels like football is back finally. The draft, I think, kind of sparked a flame in all of us. The more info we get, the more we can drive ourselves in circles trying to digest it all.
Right.
Nick's now had a taste for hosting, and he is loving. He's thriving on it right now. He knows the rush, the feeling of hosting. Clark knows it too. Clark knows what it's like.
Very, very happy to be just a part of the team.
You guys are doing great.
Well, we all did great today, and you, the listeners, did great listening to us. So round of applause for everyone on the show. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, the whole nine yards. We are there. Follow us on Twitter at RB1 Podcast. You can follow myself at PDM Rogers. Follow Clark at NFL Clark, and follow Nick at Ginger_Nick without Nick. Nick without a K. I don't know why I stuttered on the Nick part. I thought that it was so absurd that I said that. Anyways, we'll be back next week. Until then, peace!